each and every one of you. I want to take an opportunity to let you know and be assured that this court's made extensive efforts to expedite these matters. We understand the importance this has to the parents, to the teachers, to the school districts, and to the citizens of Nevada. And so we take that very seriously. I also want you to understand and express that we have a very narrow focus in this case. It's not our function to assess the wisdom, the policy behind these measures. It's our job to examine and assess the constitutionality of these measures. So with that being said, we'll go ahead and begin. Counsel, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, I've endeavored to reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, for the state of Nevada. Nevada's system for educating students in grades K through 12 is in a state of crisis. No one seriously disputes that reality. By many measures, Nevada has the worst education system in the country. Nevada's response to this crisis last year was a multifaceted reform package with an innovative education savings account program at its core. But while the ESA program has raised the hopes of countless Nevada students and parents, it has not gone into effect for one and only one reason: the district court's counterintuitive reading of Article 11, Section 6. While two sets of challengers have raised four different constitutional provisions as obstacles to the education savings account, and SB 302 in particular, only one of those theories has stuck, and only one has stopped the education savings account initiative in its tracks. With the court's permission, then, I will start with that ground, which is the Article 6 ground. The district court's Section 6 ruling is puzzling, because that section imposes only three duties on the legislature, and the legislature complied with all three of those duties. Section 6.1 requires the legislature to appropriate money from the general funds for public schools and the public universities. No one disputes that the legislature complied with that duty. Section 6.2 then provides that the appropriations bill for K through 12 education at public schools must be the first appropriations bill of the session.
Let me ask you this on that point.
Sure.
Do you consider the measures as appropriations, 302?
Well, Your Honor, we consider SB 515 as an appropriations bill.
Correct, but what about 302?
We do not think it's appropriations.
And you just expressed that the allocation has to be made first, and before any other appropriation. So I assume your argument is that 302 is not an appropriation.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The relevant appropriations bill here is SB 515. And SB 515 was the first appropriations bill of the session. And it did appropriate funds for K through 12 education. And it did appropriate funds that the legislature deemed sufficient. So it's SB 515 that complies with the second duty imposed by Section 6, which is for it to be the first appropriations bill of the session. Now, there's only one other duty, in our view, imposed by Section 6.1 and 6.2, and that is that the appropriations for K through 12 education at the public schools be in an amount that the legislature deems sufficient. Now, we know the legislature deemed the appropriation in SB 515 as sufficient, because it's right there in the title of SB 515.
Go ahead, Justice Douglas.
I guess one of the things that's been perplexing going through this is looking at 515 as well as 302, and there seems to be a lack of discussion as to the appropriation. Clearly, we start with your premise that they felt, and we're not to really look at, they felt that money was sufficient by 515, and yes, it was the first as required. But they don't discuss anything else, whether or not outside drawdowns are allowable in the sufficiency, or as someone put it, whether or not in their funding they felt they met the minimum flooring as a sufficiency. And as you pointed out at the beginning, based upon the critical analysis from the outside, our school system is lacking. So are they saying this is the best we could do, or this is what we needed to do as minimum flooring? But more importantly, where is the discussion, either in 302 or 515, that they would allow an additional drawdown and still have sufficient funding?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, I think the right place to look for the legislature's determination that this amount is sufficient would be 515.
And where is it in 515 in the legislative history or discussions that something else is going to be done, rather than saying, this is sufficient, but there's no, oh, by the way, we are also going to allow $30 million or whatever it is to be subtracted from that number and still be sufficient?
Well, here's where it is, Your Honor. I think it's where it's been in every other appropriations bill.
But this is the only one that deals with the 302 provision, so it's not like every other provision. Otherwise, we would not be here today.
Well, Your Honor, but the answer to your question is, where did the legislature determine what was sufficient? Is in the same place it's always been in an appropriations bill, which is the per pupil amount that's guaranteed by the legislation for students in the public schools. And that's the way it's always been done under the Nevada plan. It's the way that Section 6.2 itself contemplates that it will be done. The last sentence, or the last phrase in 6.2, talks about the legislature doing its appropriation based on a reasonable approximation of the population. People who passed the Education First Initiative.
But anywhere in that does it say, and we're going to reduce that by allowing this additional drawdown? Do they do that in the analytics for the budget? Anywhere in this discussion, if you know?
They don't think they did it, but they didn't have to, because the way that SB 515 works, that amount per pupil for students who are in the public system is absolutely guaranteed. They're going to get that amount per pupil. The other answer to your question, Your Honor, I think
But as we look at the totality, we're not just looking at the funding for one individual student, as we talk about student funding for common schools or public schools. It's plural. It's schools. So as you talk about funding for one child, which was interesting to me from a different position, when I looked at the funding in Clark County, the most populous area in the state of Nevada, was about $5,600, $700. Washoe was $5,800. And out in the rural, it was $27,000. But that begs another question. And we're still talking about schools, plural, for the state, not the individual that you're seizing on and talking about. So I'm still looking for this discussion or something that makes me feel better about they took into consideration that they might be lessening the amount.
Here's three places where I think you can gain some comfort. One is they did have the per pupil amount. The second thing is we know from a school district standpoint that the so-called hold harmless provision is going to mean that if any school district loses anything more than 5% of their prior enrollment, they're going to get that per pupil amount based on their previous year's enrollment. So no school district is going to lose a significant amount of money. So that's another way in which they deemed it sufficient. But here's the other thing. The third place they deemed it sufficient was when they appropriated close to $2 billion for the DSA accounts. Now, they didn't just say $2 billion for public schools, they said $2 billion for the DSA accounts. Now, 3 days earlier, they passed SB 302, which made crystal clear that the ESAs were going to be funded out of the DSA. So what we know is 3 days later, on the 1st, they appropriated $2 billion to the DSA amount, to the DSA accounts, knowing full well that those accounts would be used to fund those per pupil amounts for the public schools.
You keep saying they knew very well, but we have to interpret it based upon the reduction of an articulation in public, not private, in public for this legislative intent. So that's what I was looking for. And I'm still, it gives me some comfort because you're talking about the other process. But in this first process, there's a lack of discussion unless you can point me to something else.
All I can point you to, Your Honor, is the fact that having 3 days earlier said, and everybody knowing full well, the DSA account is going to take care of both the public schools, K through 12, and any students that want to use ESA funds. The legislature said that $2 billion was going to be enough. It's an estimate, just like it is every other year, and there are provisions in the Act, in 515, the Appropriations Act, that says that if at the end of the year it turns out the $2 billion isn't enough, we can, if it's too much, the rest of this money will revert to the general fund. That's 6-6 and 7-6.
What you're suggesting is that the DSA appropriation encompassed both the requirement under Section 2 to fund the public schools as well as funding for the ESA accounts?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That's what the legislature had in its contemplation when 3 days after they said that the ESA accounts are going to be funded out of the DSA, they then said $2 billion is going to be enough for the DSAs, the DSA account. And we don't know how many people are going to use this ESA, and that's why this is a very practical approach, because they have one account, the distributive school account, that is going to fund everybody that stays in the public school and everybody who uses the education savings account.
Is that position inconsistent, though, with the declaration in 515 itself that the appropriation is deemed sufficient to fund the public schools?
No, not in any way, Your Honor, because the amount, $2 billion, is sufficient for both purposes. And again, though, there are additional assurances.
But the ESAs do not fund public schools.
They don't, but anybody who takes the ESA is going to take it out of the distributive DSA account. The amount that goes into the DSA account.
I understand the mechanism how the statute is to operate, but it seems inconsistent, and I'm asking you to clarify this, that the legislature, consistent with its obligations under Section 6.1 and 6.2 in particular, would be declaring that the $2 billion is sufficient to fund the public schools, and then accept that it also is sufficient to fund private use of these monies.
But here's the thing, Your Honor. The legislature never said $2 billion is the amount that is sufficient for the public schools. They said that the $2 billion is sufficient for the DSAs, knowing it was going to be used for both purposes. They also said that what's going to be sufficient for the public schools are these per pupil amounts under the Nevada plan, as they always had, and all of that's backed up by the hold harmless provision. So the right place to look.
So your argument would be that the amendment to NRS 387, I believe it's 045 or 425, I get these numbers mixed up, was a signal that the distributive school fund would be incorporating the ESA accounts.
Yeah, it's one of many. I mean, I think if you look at SB 302, it's very clear that the legislature understood in that the ESAs that they were creating would be funded from the distributive school account, the DSA. So when 3 days later they put a bunch of money in there, they're not saying, boy, this is the amount that's necessary for the public schools, and if a single student uses an ESA, there's going to be less money in there. They're saying, this is what's sufficient for the DSA, not for the public schools, for both. And then if you want to look at what they thought was sufficient for the public schools, I think the places to look are the per pupil amount and the whole time.
Let me ask you this. As to the per pupil amount, was that amount factored into the equation when they determined that the $2 billion was sufficient for the DSA, including the appropriation for the private school vouchers?
Yes.
And so was there an increase there? Was there additional allocations that were appropriated to the DSA based upon the ESA amount? And there's no cap. You concede that. There is no cap. We don't know how many people will be registering, what impact that will have on the DSA. and but you said there's a mechanism at the end of the year where that can be fixed.
Right.
That, and I would assume, I don't know, if it goes through Interim Finance Committee, I don't know how that is fixed. But you say if there is a problem that the school district doesn't have an adequate appropriation, well, then there's a mechanism to fix that.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And so I don't think there really is a situation here where the funding will be insufficient in the legislature's view. And I do think there's a lot of deference to the legislature. I mean, the legislature could have appropriated more. They could have appropriated less. I don't think that's really a judicially administrable test.
Mr. Clement, excuse me, I wanted to have you finish the Chief's, your answer to the Chief's question. Were you, had you completed your answer before I asked
you? I was simply going to add the thought that, you know, one of the oddities of the reasoning of the district court and my friends on the other side argument is it's really an attack on 515, but that's not what they alleged was unconstitutional in their complaint. They were very careful to focus their complaint only on SB 302. And so if there's a problem with SB 515, and we very much think there isn't, the result wouldn't be that the ESAs that were created in the SB 302 are unconstitutional or are enjoined. It would be that the whole SB 515 appropriation would be unconstitutional. Now, that's not a claim they've made, so I don't even think the court properly can reach that issue.
Mr. Clement, the question I wanted to pose in addition, and you started your argument under 6.2, the language in 6.2, as you know, the language in 6.1 refers to common schools, mm-hmm. but the language in 6.2 is more narrow. It says, before any other appropriation is enacted, etc., the legislature shall enact one or more appropriations to provide money to fund the operation of the public schools in the state for kindergarten through grade 12 for the next ensuing biennium. Now, that language, what you're suggesting, should incorporate the education savings accounts. But you would acknowledge, wouldn't you, that the education savings accounts are not public schools?
Well, I guess I'm not understanding which language you think incorporates them, because...
Well, I'm not suggesting that it does. Your argument says that that the ESAs are incorporated within the distributive school fund that was funded by Section 515. And under this requirement... that former Governor Gibbons promoted to the people, education first. He said, we're going to fund, as I read Section 2, the public schools first.
And the legislature did, Your Honor, in SB 515.
Did it when it incorporates within it and appropriates from it money that is to be used to fund the education savings accounts?
We think so, Your Honor, because...
That's what I'm trying to get you to articulate.
Well, and I'm trying, Your Honor. It's the language of 6.2 doesn't refer to the distributed school account or DSA. It just says that the first appropriation has to fund the public schools, K through 12. So as a matter of mechanics, SB 515 does fund the public schools first, and it does that by putting a lot of money in the DSA. But it put a lot of money in there knowing that both the public schools and the ESA would be funded from that same pot. It did it knowing that there was this symbiotic relationship, because the amount of money, because it's all done per pupil, as it always has been in Nevada, the amount of money that will go to the public schools will vary a little bit depending on how many students use the ESA.
So let me, if I may just ask this one final follow-up in this area, because I don't... Appellant's Appendix 22 provides a summary of the distributive school account for the 2015-17 biennium. And my reading of that exhibit does not disclose to me where in the appropriation of the distributive school account it accounts for education savings accounts. Wouldn't it have to do so to account for your argument that the legislature in funding 515 took into account the ESAs?
We don't think so, Your Honor, and that's because I don't think you read any one piece of legislation in isolation. And when you read SB 302 together with SB 515, it just seems clear that the legislature, having just created a different education program that's going to be funded out of the DSA, and then 3 days later saying, we're going to put $2 billion in the DSA, they didn't forget about the ESAs.
Well, forgive me, the accountant in me, I don't find a line item for ESA, and I would assume that if that was their expectation, they would have allocated some of that money for ESA purposes.
And here's why I don't think it's there, is because the legislature, if it would have been there, it would have only been a guess. Because especially in the first year of this program, nobody knew how many students were going to take advantage of this. And that's why it was the absolute kind of logical thing for the legislature to do. And if you think about this, and especially when you focus on the fact that this is really an argument about whether there's a problem with SB 515, I mean, if the legislature had, in SB 515, said, here's $1.7 billion for the DSA, and this is for the public school part of the DSA, and then the next 5 minutes later, they passed SB 516 that put in another $0.3 billion, because this is the piece we think is going to go to the ESAs. My friends on the other side would have no argument based on Section 6. And I just don't see anything in the language of Section 6 that forces the legislature to do that or to make a guess.
So, you know, counsel, are you suggesting that once the 515 appropriation is made, that anything that follows will be, and I'm using your words, either symbiotic, and we assume that the legislators knew what they were doing because it's 5 minutes, 3 days, or 4 weeks later, that it's okay? So long as we appropriate, buying through 515, anything that comes thereafter, including the 302 savings accounts here, is okay, and they must have known about that money, and we have met the requirement of sufficiency for public schools?
I think that's right, Your Honor, but you do have other indicia and other guarantees that the legislature did deem the amount sufficient.
Where?
The per pupil amount, which is guaranteed, and the hold harmless provision, which is not in SB 515 itself, but it's part of the background provisions that that the legislature surely took into account when they were passing that.
Surely took into account when they were passing. You know that how?
Because this court instructs that you assume that the legislature understands that it's legislating against the corpus juris. It understands.
We deal with that proposition session after session after session in cases like this. So can we make that assumption?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think of all the places you'd want to make that assumption is when you're looking at constitutional text that says deems sufficient. I mean, I really think that language like deems sufficient is, the deems in particular, is language that's sort of a signal from the constitutional framers to the courts that this is something that's not really justiciable. You're not really, you don't have a yardstick that says, well, you know, $2 billion, that's just not enough. It needed to be 2.2. And so I think particularly when you have language like that, and the actual way this law is going to operate now in practice is that the schools are going to get their per pupil amount. Even if people take ESAs, that might affect the slightly the mix of how much money they're going to get from the state versus the local funding, and we can try to talk about the math of that, but I don't think it makes any difference because those school districts are guaranteed that per pupil amount. If they don't get it, they can bring a mandamus action against the state to get it, but they're guaranteed that amount. They are also guaranteed the per pupil amount times at least 95% of their school district. So if the parade of horrible happens and some school district loses 10% of its student bodies to ESAs, they're not going to lose 10% of their funding. They'll actually get the per pupil amount based on the previous year's enrollment. That's how that hold harmless provision works.
But let me ask you this, and did that answer your question, Justice Sada?
In large part, yes. Thank you.
But the hold harmless is pre-existing, so if there were a mass exodus of school children from Nevada, not to the ESA accounts, but to other states, that hold harmless, too, would protect against a more than 5% drop, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. And in both cases, I think that's why the legislature is deeming this amount to be sufficient, because even without the ESAs, I mean, you could have some, you know, it's a county where just all the businesses closed down and 30% of the population left in within a biennium. And the legislature's already thought about that and protected the schools in a way that they deemed sufficient. And I think those are the kind of legislative.
So essentially you're telling us the SA account has no effect on the adequacy of the funding for the public schools because they get that money anyway. And I guess my question is, those students that go from the public schools to a private school, private institution, that money doesn't come from the allocation for the public school, but I'm not sure that that's a correct analysis.
I want to clear up that confusion, because look, if without the ESA program, a school district was going to have 100 students in it, they'd get 100 times the per pupil amount.
Correct.
If, let's say, one student goes and uses an ESA, they're now going to get 99 times the per pupil amount.
Begs the question then. If the legislature set the funding that it felt was adequate at $2 billion to fund the public schools, if, and again, we don't know how many are going to migrate, there is no cap from the public schools into private schools, and that money is reallocated from the public schools, doesn't that essentially indicate that, well, you know, $2 billion was what we felt was adequate, but $2 billion isn't there anymore?
If I accepted every premise of your question, I would say, yeah, that would be a problem. But with all due respect, the premise that you built in was that the legislature said $2 billion for public schools was what
I'm sorry, for the DSA account, but isn't essentially the same thing, because under the Constitution, the DSA is to fund public schools.
Well, no, it's not the same thing. And I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that actually mentions the DSA. Certainly not in any of the provisions that
appropriation, but we're just mincing words.
Well, we're not, because the legislature has to make an appropriation.
It's adequate.
The Constitution could care less which account you put it in. And so, other than Section 3, which is the claim they've dropped, but when you talk about general fund money, they have to appropriate for education. But there's no magic to putting it in the DSA box. And once they put it in that box, if they put it in that box knowing that that was going to be used for two purposes, it's just, with all due respect, wrong to say that that's the amount they deem sufficient for public education. Well, especially when the same statute has a provision that's directed only at public education, which is the per pupil amount. That's the place to look.
Okay, and you're chewing into your rebuttal time. Colleagues, have you got any questions that you want to ask at this point? Okay, thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Appellees ask this court.
Counsel, before you get into it, counsel finished up by stating that the Constitution didn't care about where the money went. What is your response to that particular statement?
So what he exactly said was that the Constitution didn't care which account it went in, but the Constitution certainly does care about that first appropriation. And it's not only the first appropriation, it's an appropriation that has to be before any other appropriation, and it has to be for the operation of the public schools. So that very first appropriation, SB 515, has to be for the operation of the public schools and only for the operation of the public schools. Whether it's called the DSA or not, that doesn't matter. What matters is that first appropriation.
So let me ask you this, the question I asked previously, do you consider 302 an appropriation?
No, I do not.
Okay, thank you.
It's a mechanism that every time the legislature appropriates the funds for the public schools, creates an unconstitutional diversion to private expenditures.
Okay.
So from the outset, the framers of the Nevada Constitution recognized the importance of public education and the pressures that the legislature would feel in funding it. So they built safeguards into the Constitution. Then in 2006, the citizens of Nevada confirmed the primacy of public education to this state and further strengthened those safeguards to public education funding. Education First Amendment, as we talked about, requires that the first appropriation of the biennium by the legislature be for the operation of the public schools only. Anything else in that appropriation is void. It requires that only then, after the legislature has set that money aside for the public schools, it then can turn to the rest of the state's priorities and the rest of the revenue and divide it up against for all of those other priorities. SB 302 violates the Nevada Constitution in three ways. First, the diversion violation. It uses funds that were appropriated for the operation of the public schools for private expenditures. That alone violates the Nevada Constitution. That's the diversion violation. Second, there's a sufficiency violation. The Constitution requires that the legislature appropriate the amount it deems sufficient. Every ESA deducts from that amount.
You've heard the argument that's been advocated. Their position, no, it does not, that it is sufficient.
So there are many different issues that are problems with their sufficiency argument, and I can turn to those now. But I want to make sure we're clear that any one of these three violations, the last one is the violation of Section 2 to the legislature's obligation to create and maintain a uniform system of schools. But let's talk about sufficiency. So they argue that it's just one-to-one. The legislature, you know, they put money into the appropriation for public schools, and if it goes out for an ESA, there's no diminution because the schools are going to get what they're going to get. And let's talk about why that's wrong. First, it's not one-to-one. The state does not fund the entire BSG. The state only funds a portion of it. The other portion comes from local funds. So when a child leaves the school district, the state, let's take Clark County for example, the state has only actually budgeted and appropriated about $2,000 for that student. But when that student leaves with an ESA, they then, the state pays out to that student $5,100. There's $3,000 more that were not budgeted or appropriated by the state for that student has now diminished the amount that was deemed sufficient. It's also not one-to-one because we know that there are going to be other students who have never set foot in public schools that are going to be using ESAs and that were not taken account, as you have already noted, that the when they talk about the amounts that the legislature through the Nevada plan determined, they only took into account the public school population currently and the public school population that would be anticipated for the biennium. It doesn't take into account any of those private school and homeschool students that are going to use ESAs. They're not currently part of the public school
system. Is the deduction any different when a student simply leaves Nevada and moves elsewhere? Is that also the same deduction that occurs?
So let's talk about this hold harmless provision because
and
that's what I'm getting to. So when a student leaves a district, moves to California, moves somewhere else, the state still has the money. So the state set aside for the public schools the money that was appropriate for that student still there.
But my question was, is that an equal deduction from the amount that's available to the public school when a student simply leaves the state? Is it the same amount?
No, it's totally different.
Okay.
So when a student leaves to the state still has the money. When an ESA is used, the money is paid out.
But when the student leaves the state, does the school district suffer a deduction in the amount of $5,700 or whatever the amount is?
So let's talk about
But you answer that question?
Yes, and it gets to the hold harmless provision. So the question is the district impacted? They argue that the district is going to get the same amount that they would otherwise. It's per pupil, and if they go below a certain amount, they get their pupil by their basic support guarantee. And that is
this
correct.
Is a simpler question. If a student leaves Nevada, does the accounting work that $5,700 is subtracted from the school district account that student was attending?
So when a student leaves, then they don't get their state portion of the funds for that student. That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
But that varies by county.
It varies by county.
So in Clark County, for example, where the amount from the distributive school fund is substantially less than $5,000,
the amount that that county would get or would not get when a student leaves is the, I think it's $3,000 or so and some change. But if an ESA student elects to become a participant in the program in Clark County and enters into that program, the amount that that student will receive is between $5,000 and $5,700, which is substantially higher than the amount that would be allocated to Clark County from the DSA program. Is that true?
That's exactly right.
So what about the Clark County piece of that? Because in Clark County, call it $3,000. I think it's actually less is the state share, and call it $2,000 is the county share. If a student leaves the Clark County School District, does Clark County still leave the $2,000 in that's attributable to that student in the per student allocation?
The money, the local money that they have does not go out and pay out on the ESA. The ESAs are only funded by state money, and the local money is still available to the district.
Okay, but does Clark County also budget on a per student basis?
So I think that the Clark County district, it budgets based on both the local and state funds that it gets. Yes.
So, counsel, your answer to the question that I asked the petitioner in this case with respect to the process, that is, first we start with 515 and we appropriate. The petitioner suggests that that's all that's required. We meet the mandate of that, and whatever happens after that, so long as it is symbiotic or the others understand what's going to happen, it's okay. Safe for me to assume that your answer to that would be, oh no, that's incorrect?
Absolutely. So that goes to our diversion violation. So it's not just, they say there's these three things that are required to do that. Those three duties are inaccurate and incomplete. They have to appropriate the amount for the operation of the public schools. Any other appropriation is void. So if they, you know, we can't see it in there, as has been noted by the court. There is absolutely, we don't need to assume what happened. There are facts. There is no mention of 302. And SB 515 lays out clearly, there's per pupil that goes to the public schools. There's class size reduction. There's special education. There's gifted. All of it is public school funding. There's no basis for saying that just the per pupil part is guaranteed. In fact, in a state publication, RA-229, in our response appendix, it says that, in fact, that the entire amount is guaranteed, and it's entirely public school funding. But nowhere in there does it say anything about SB 302. Nowhere in the legislative history. Nowhere in any of the minutes. And in fact, the Nevada plan, which takes a lot of time to do those calculations, we see in appellate's exhibit that there was no difference. There was nothing added for SB 302 in regard to for 515. So they didn't take it into account, but by using public funds, that is a violation of by diverting those funds from public schools that were appropriated only for this purpose.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Mr. Clement had talked about if there had been an SB 516 that had allocated $0.3 billion. Is there still constitutional infirmities there? If you have $1.7 billion for SB 515 and $0.3 billion for 516, and was there any legislative history on that type of thinking from any of our legislators to say, you know what, it's $2 billion, but really they only need $1.7 for the public schools. The other thing is for our new ESA programs.
So they say, you know, as you noted, two accounts, one account, it doesn't matter. It matters. It's an entirely different political exercise to appropriate for public education, but then say we're going to divert out the back door some amount to subsidize private schooling and homeschooling, and we don't know how much, and we're going to include that in there. Than to say we are going to openly and transparently appropriate the funds that are deemed sufficient for the public schools. We're going to set that aside, and that's going to be safeguard for public schools. And then we're going to turn to the rest of our priorities, public safety, infrastructure, mental health services, all the things the state needs to do. And to say we're going to try and convince people that some portion of our limited public funds should be used to subsidize private schooling and homeschooling. That's a different exercise. So we need those two appropriations. The first one has to be solely for the operating.
Was there discussion on that with the legislature when they were passing SB 515? Was there any discussion? Anybody saying, hey, we better worry about constitutionality of this because we're going to only do SB 515 for the public schools and then we're going to take some money off of the ESA?
No discussion of that at all. There's only the SB 515 for the operation of the public schools. And let me get back to it. Under their interpretation, if all they have to do is appropriate for the public schools but not use for the public schools, that makes Section 6 meaningless. An appropriation means you're going to use the money for that purpose. And in fact, they are not using that money.
Well, but let's say that not a single child elected the ESA. You would find no constitutional infirmity with that appropriation, right?
If there were no funds diverted from SB 515.
There are funds that were available theoretically, but no child elected to do that. You would say that appropriation was
515. Yes.
Was mm-hmm. legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
it's only the implementation of SB 302. If that is unconstitutional.
Well, doesn't that really then make your argument not a 6-2 first appropriation argument?
No. So we have a diversion argument, which means the funds that were appropriated, SB 302 creates a mechanism by which those funds are diverted out.
Okay, and the constitutional infirmity in that is what?
That the funds that are appropriated for the public schools must be used for the public schools.
Okay.
Using funds that are appropriated for the public schools for any other purpose, ESAs or anything else, is unconstitutional.
Well, let me ask you that, and again, maybe I don't understand the mechanism of this entirely, but there are several provisions that allow funds from the DSA to be used for other purposes, for private purposes, for reimburse facilities that operate schools to treat youths with addictions.
So
how does that figure into this, if that's the argument?
So let's talk about the drug treatment facilities. It's a 2013 law that hasn't been tested, and if it is challenged and found that that is in fact a private expenditure using public school funds, then it's unconstitutional. It's not what is before us now, but more likely those are public school students in a facility for drug addiction, and the only way that we can provide those services to them is in that facility. It seems to be more likely under, disability access laws and other responsibilities that our responsibility is to educate them. The only way we can do that is there. But that's not what...
But isn't that a beauty is in the eyes of the beholder sort of argument? I mean...
If the use of these funds is in fact for private use, it's unconstitutional. So I'm guessing that it's probably not because the state has an obligation to educate those children still, but that's not before us now. But if it is private, it's unconstitutional.
So I assume based on your argument that had the legislature appropriated the money that it estimated would be used for education savings accounts from the general fund, separate and apart from its appropriation under 515, that act would not have been unconstitutional in your view.
That's correct as to our diversion violation and our sufficiency violation. If the legislature had openly and transparently appropriated to the public schools and safeguarded that money, used it only for the public schools, it's not a violation of that. We do believe that it is a violation of Section 2, that the legislature has the obligation to create and maintain a uniform system, that these funds will be used at schools without the same rules about discrimination, without the same curricular and teaching requirements. And there also is the expressio unius doctrine that says that the legislature cannot do things that undercut its duty to maintain the public schools. And these voucher programs, uncapped and unlimited, with being used largely in zip codes with our more affluent folks, pulling all of that away from the public schools has the potential to really undermine the public school system.
So in that argument, how do you address the use of the word all in article.
All suitable means.
In section one.
So let's talk about all suitable means. I just want to make sure you know, all suitable means has nothing to do with the diversion violation or sufficiency.
Oh, I understand.
Those things are unconstitutional, and all suitable means can't say that. All suitable means is then followed by an entire provision or constitutional section on public education. And so, and you look at the debates at the time, it was about funding public education and setting up public education. I do not think there was any sense that this was going to be about using public funds to fund
private education. How do you address the analytics, though, in, for example, Meredith and out of Indiana and
those
a couple
are
of other states that have examined that same question and said that had the funds come from this, the general fund, it would be within the scope of article or of section one.
So that's important also to note that the cases that they cite that have approved much more limited voucher programs have not used public school funds. They've used general funds. And so there are some states that have come out that all suitable means does allow it. We have a different constitution with a different history to it, and the program itself is different. We have the Louisiana and the Florida courts have gone a different way. So the courts in the states have gone different ways on the all suitable means language.
But in fairness to the legislature, they're uncertain about the extent to which this program may be used, and it's new to Nevada. They approach this by saying we're going to fund the distributed school fund under 515, and we'll make an accounting adjustment to the extent that this is diverted out for ESAs. Isn't, at least with respect to the Section 1 and Section 2 article questions, isn't that perfectly permissible in our state, and shouldn't it be?
I disagree with that, but I do want to get back. I disagree with that on Section 2, but I do want to get back to an important fact that I hope I don't want to make sure doesn't get lost on Section 6, which is that when these ESAs are used, there's really, you know, the state will make them whole. There's been discussion of this full harmless provision. I really want to get to this because when the district uses, when they lose a student, the money is still back with the state, so they can hold that district harmless. So if it falls below the 5%, the 5% is still a lot for a district to absorb, and that's going to cause harm to that school district, and it's going to make it below the sufficiency. But when an ESA is used, the money's no longer there for the state to make the district whole. That's the big difference there. This money is coming from the school's account. Appellants talk about how, well, they at the end
well,
of
there
time,
may be a practical problem in whether the money is sitting in the state general fund. But you would acknowledge, wouldn't you, that there is a legal obligation on the part of the state to fund that 5% shortfall. And as much pressure as that may put on the legislature and the governor to find the money, they have a legal obligation to make up that deficiency. Isn't that true?
And what if they can't? And so back in 2008, they couldn't, so they lowered the basic support guarantee. And that creates this isn't something that just happens. This, the SB 302 is a statute that creates a situation where we're going to be drawing down on the funds that are going to be sufficient. And this, if the schools have to go back, now they're at the end of the line. The Education First Amendment requires it to be at the front of the line. They don't have to be going back and saying, we don't have enough money now because of SB 302, and I know everything's been appropriated or spent, and we need our funds. Now we're at the end of the line, and that's exactly what Education First said, no. School, public schools, not education generally, public schools are at the front of the line. They get their money first. We can't create a mechanism that draws down on what's been deemed sufficient, and then we have to come back around at the end, at the back of the line, and try and get our money and get a loan and get it from the general fund. That's exactly what Section 6 is supposed to prevent.
But doesn't the Constitution kind of contemplate that there's necessarily some guesswork? The word reasonably appears twice.
Absolutely.
In Section 6, in the section you're relying on. So they're estimating the amount and they're estimating the number of students necessarily because budgets are prospective.
Absolutely. There's no question.
But so I think you're really getting into a deems sufficient, like, argument, which would be very... Do you agree with your opponents that that is non-justiciable, whether or not the legislature's allocated sufficient money?
So I disagree that the legislature can, that the court can never look at whether it is sufficient, but that's not here. We are not arguing that the $2 billion wasn't sufficient. We are taking that at the legislature's.
But you really are when you say, what if a huge number of students go into the ESA? You do have the 5% hold harmless, so how that works years into the future, I don't know. But you're saying the amount may not be enough. The legislature may have miscalculated in what it deemed sufficient.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Okay. What I'm saying is that the legislature said $2 billion is sufficient for the public schools.
It said $2 billion is sufficient for the number of school-age children at whatever dollar per head.
Right.
That's a different thing than sufficient.
No, the whole appropriation. There's no reason to say that just Section 1 and 2, which is what you have to believe, is that the only part that they were deeming sufficient was 1 and 2, and all the stuff for special ed and for classic, that's surplusage. That's not, we didn't think that was necessary. Just the 1 and 2 is the deem. There's nothing in 515 okay. That says, here's our deemed sufficient part, and the rest, we're just throwing that in as gravy. No. The legislature said, here's 515, and at the start it says, sufficient for public education, K-12. So all of 515 is what is sufficient for the public schools. And that's, I mean, if we go with their point that it's not justiciable, that the amount the legislature puts appropriates is not, then it's even more important that this court holds the legislature to its process. If we can't second guess what they appropriate, then we have to make sure that they reasonably appropriate the funds for that are sufficient for public schools first, and that they use that money for public schools.
Without diversion elsewhere.
Without diversion. I'll look back through my notes to make sure that I have covered everything, kept me up. One thing that we've talked... The one thing that I want to make sure we cover is the simultaneous. They say that you can do it both at the same time, but again, that's not before. Simultaneous is not before. It doesn't just say first. It says education has to be before any other appropriation. The go-back provision that they talk about, that provision at the end of the biennium, yes, the legislature is required to appropriate for the biennium. That provision proves Appelli's point. That money can't come out before the end of the biennium. If in the odd chance there's a surplus, it goes back and the legislature starts again by appropriating for the next biennium, education first. But the fact that it can't go back until they improves our point, it can only be used for public schools. On the point that the legislature knew about 302 when passing 515, what we know is that, in fact, there was no discussion of it, as we've already said. The legislature may have believed, as Mr. Clement argues, that there's no difference. We either are paying it to the schools or paying it out to the ESAs. But in fact, we know that's not true because we know the state commitment is only the $2,000, and the amount that goes out in the ESA, say for Clark County, is the $5,000. So there is a deduction in the amount that was deemed sufficient. Let's see, make sure. Notes. So I think that covers the points that he had raised. I do want to say that as we look at this, they haven't really raised the issue of irreparable harm, but this in this in, at this hearing. But what we know here is that these students will be harmed, and there will be deduction to public school services. The Education First Amendment is straightforward and clear. The legislature must appropriate the funds sufficient to operate the public schools before any other appropriation.
Let me go back to your irreparable harm argument, though. Again, going back to the safe harbor, the hold harmless provision. Contrary to your argument that as to the irreparable harm, because there is a fix. There's a way
really
to,
you know,
if there's a deficiency, at some point that deficiency can be addressed. And again, I'm not sure it has to wait till the end of the biennium to occur. If there's a deficiency at any point, it seems to me you could go to IFC and say, hey, look, we've got you know, above 5% here, and we need some money right now. We've got maintenance issues. We've got teacher issues.
But there's no money left. All the money that has been appropriated goes out in a portion to the school districts. And so if there is this huge drawdown, the press yesterday said 8,000 applications. That's $40 million out of the state budget. So there's no place to go to make the districts to hold them harmless. The money isn't there anymore.
But there's a difference between that practical concern that you have, and I'm not minimizing it, and the legal obligation of the state to meet the requirement that is imposed on it to fund that shortfall. Let's take this hypothetical. I know the effort that is made by the legislature and their staff to appropriately estimate the number of students that would be participating in the distributed school account. But suppose they fall short of that estimate. Suppose instead of $2 billion, that an influx of children and families results in something closer to $2.25 billion. The state is legally obligated to address that shortfall. Isn't that true?
Yes, and let's talk about there's a big difference between something that just happens, like a recession or a big surge of population, and something that is enacted that diverts money from public schools on purpose to private expenditures. That's a much different thing. Does the state have an obligation? Yes, but can they always do it? No. If the funds aren't available, they can't.
I don't think the legislature should be viewed as purposefully trying to harm public schools through this program. This is a funding mechanism. They're looking at the source of money. And if you look at Section 1 as funding all of the common schools, it would seem like that education initiative encompasses not only the public schools, but private use as well. Isn't that true?
So under all suitable means, can I finish my answer?
Please do.
Under all suitable means, that's possible, but under Section 6, it's not. That first appropriation has to be only for the operation of the public schools. And so they have set up whatever their intent, and I don't need to malign their intent. They can't do it. The money can't come out of public schools, and it can't diminish what they have appropriated as sufficient by using it for.
So that comes back to my point earlier, other than your difference of opinion about how Article or Section 1 and Section 2 should be interpreted. Had the legislature appropriated money as an estimate for ESAs from the state general fund and separately funded the public schools as they did under 515, there'd be no constitutional complaint here.
There would not be a constitutional complaint with Section 6, but that is not what is before us. SB 302 does not do that. It uses public school funds.
So addressing the question that is before us, you would agree that that approach would not have resulted in a constitutional difference or complaint.
Well, that, your hypothetical is not before us because SB 302 uses the funds from public education and diminishes the amount. But if they want to have another appropriation where they do SB 515 in a second, we may have different concerns with that, but they won't be Section
6. I don't want to minimize the importance of the language of Section 6, but in some respects, this looks like a distinction without a difference.
But remember what we said, it's a different political exercise to divert it out the back door than it is to have to say, we're going to subsidize private schooling and homeschooling instead of other state priorities in that when they're funding the rest of the things. Public education is first, and then second, they have to take up these other priorities. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Godley, thank you for your argument today. Mr. Clement?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points in rebuttal. I'd like to start with trying to make as clear as possible that when you look at SB 515, it does not say $2 billion is sufficient for public education K through 12. It says $2 billion is sufficient for the DSA, knowing full well that that's funding both.
Under 6.1, it's used for public schools.
No, with all due respect, 6.1 doesn't say that the DSA has to be used for public schools. It says you have to fund public schools. Doesn't say a word about DSA. DSA is just an account, and they put money in there for two purposes, knowing it was sufficient for both purposes. And that should be the way to analyze that issue.
On the what do you do with the second paragraph that says the public education has to be funded first, the appropriation has to be first?
I would say that that's satisfied.
Or more legitimately, before any other appropriation is enacted.
Which we read as meaning first, which is you can't have another appropriation that's done before. That didn't happen here. The first appropriations bill of the session, SB 515, funded public education. It also
had before any other when it is including the DSA, the ESA accounts. So
two things about that, Your Honor. One is we think, just like at the Olympics, if there's a tie for first, you're still in first. And so if they do two things in there, especially when they're closely related, we think education still comes first. But the second point is, please keep in mind, go read their complaint. They don't challenge 515. That is an argument only about why 515 is defective. And they didn't challenge 515 for a very good reason. They're trying to pull a fast one. The legislature...
So it would be void if it were...
Exactly. I mean, they themselves like to put that up and point to section, subsection 5, which says the appropriation is void. It doesn't say half the appropriation is void. The appropriation is void. They don't want that. They're trying to pull a gotcha on the legislature. The legislature put $2 billion in there, knowing it was for two purposes. They want to trap that $2 billion in there and say now it can only be used for one purpose.
But Mr. Clement, the quote from the statute, SB 515, that I'm focused on, at 3736 of the record, quote, an act ensuring sufficient funding for K-12 public education for the 2015-2017 biennium. That's the quote. That's
amen,
the declaration.
Amen, Your Honor, and it did it.
So SB 515? How does that quote incorporate a diversion of that money for ESA accounts?
And what funds that you call closely related, take that section and show me where funds can be used for something closely related to.
Look, that's a separate question. Let me take them in order. It says that it is sufficient. That it's talking about the whole bill. And the whole bill is sufficient for public education. In the title, it doesn't say, and oh, by the way, every penny in here is exclusively for public education. And, of course, if you understand that the same legislature just passed SB 302, then, of course, when they fund the DSA account with $2 billion, they know some ESAs are coming out of that, and yet they still think, and put it in the title, that the whole thing provides sufficient funding through K through 12. The other fundamental problem, though, with this idea that the whole problem here is that there was two things in SB 515, is that's just not the constitutional challenge that they brought here. And if I can say just one thing more, which is just, you know, the point that I think they conceded, that they could have passed SB 516 just 3 seconds later and this whole thing would have gone away. I think that underscores that how trivial their argument is. The reason the legislature did this is because they knew that they didn't know in advance how many ESAs there would be. So they put it in one pot. And nobody was saying there in the legislature, oh my goodness, you're about to commit a Section 6 violation. People were talking about Section 10 and religion. They weren't saying, oh my goodness, this is terrible. You're about to put two things in the DSA account.
I've got one quick, simple question. Again, you're saying that 515 encompassed both DSA and ESA. Which, you know, you based the formula on what adequate funding of the schools was based on a per pupil determination, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So now, when you were creating that formula, did the per pupil amount increase, anticipating that it would also be impacted by the ESA?
No, because the per pupil amount really is independent of the ESAs. If there are,
but if that's what was used to determine what was adequate funding, you know, that's my question.
No, it wasn't. The $2 billion isn't like a simple, you know, mathematical calculation based on that. Because you know, because that's way too. It's much more complicated than that. In part because that per pupil amount includes local funds and all of the like.
I understand that.
So I think the critical thing to point out here is that if there's not a single ESA that's actually used, then the public schools are going to get their number of pupils by that per pupil amount. No matter how many ESAs are used, the public schools are still going to get that per pupil amount times how many pupils they have. And none of this fuzzy math about that it's, you know, 5,000 going out, none of that makes any difference to that. There is a guarantee in the statute, and I could bore you with the math.
No,
what's going to happen is the local proportion of that 5,000 is going to go up because none of the local money is going out. So it's guaranteed in the statute. They are going to get that money for few.
And that does answer my question. And so, colleagues, I'll ask you if you have any additional questions at this time.
One additional question. Understanding that we have unique interrelationship of our statutes and our Constitution. There's a split out there in terms of other states, in terms of for and against. What one case would you want us to look at that supports your position?
Well, I mean, I'd love for you to take a look at the Indiana case as a general matter for both of these cases. I think it's probably fair to say that and that covers the Section 2 issue that's in this case. But I think it's fair to say that the Section 6 provisions that we spent most of our time talking about are pretty darn unique to the state of Nevada. I don't think there is an analog there. So as to answer your question generally, the merit of the case out of Indiana is a great opinion, unanimous opinion, I think, of that court.
But it is the case that in Meredith, the voucher program was funded through the state general fund separately from the allocation of money for the education program, for public education.
It is true, Your Honor, but think of the implications for that for the challenge they've actually brought. If this was constitutional, I think they've conceded that it would be constitutional even if in a separate appropriation they put the money into the DSA.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they set up a separate little account, called it something, you know, sure, ESA, we've got enough acronyms here, but they put it in a completely separate account, then there'd be no constitutional problem under Section 6. Well, there's two big problems with that. One is, then that means that there's no inherent problem with SB 302, which is the only thing they challenged. That means that there was that the legislature committed a footfault in SB 515, which they haven't challenged, and the remedy for which would be to avoid the whole thing. The second thing it means, and we haven't talked a lot about irreparable injury, but it would really underscore that their clients are not injured in any irreparable way by that constitutional injury. There's this complete disconnect between that constitutional problem and where their injury is. And that's not true for their Section 2 claim. If they're right about Section 2 and the legislature can't do this at all, well, then they got a pretty good irreparable harm argument. But if the gravamen of their argument is that the legislature could have done the exact same thing if it had just funded it through the general funds or a DSA appropriations 516 3 seconds later, They didn't get harmed by that 3 seconds. I mean, there's just a complete disconnect there. So I think for both those reasons, that distinction actually, whatever you want to say in dictum, I mean, that would cause you to reverse this preliminary injunction because it shows there's no problem with SB 302. Thank you, Your Honor.
Colleagues? That's it? Okay. Counsel, thank you for your arguments. They were excellent. The briefing in this case was excellent. We appreciate the amici participation. We will carefully consider this case, understanding the importance of the timelines at stake. And again, this court will stand in recess. This matter is submitted. We'll stand in recess until 11.